You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Brian Wolfmiller, Jack Phillips, Larry Rast, and Will Wheaton at the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Making the Case is Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th at Concordia University, Chicago. Registration is $150. Learn more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Making the Case, July 23rd and 24th in Chicago.
Science is amoral. Science is a method. It is a method of determining facts. It is a method of gaining knowledge. It doesn't have a right or wrong. Science can't tell us what's right and what's wrong.
That's what we're made for. Christians live on the rough edge and confess Christ.
I think that, you know, when the Lutherans embrace homosexual practices, they find, in quotes, Lutheran reasons for doing so. They will invent their own kind of theological rationale for it.
One of the most comforting things that people find when they turn to the Psalter is that all of the turmoil in their own hearts and minds, all of the trouble in their own daily lives that they feel and experience, all of this is right there on the pages of the Bible.
Midwest turkey hunters love listening to Issues Etc. in the spring.
I think it's fair to argue that when the founders of our country were conceiving of how the country would be structured geographically in terms of borders and in terms of the various states, they were dealing with far fewer states and far fewer territories at the time. But they were clear on one thing. The nation's capital, the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., was not going to be a state. It would simply be a district that exists in close proximity to several states, but wouldn't be a part of those states. There was a good political reason for doing that. Does that reason still hold true, especially now since the House of Representatives have passed, along party lines, a bill that would, make Washington, D.C. a full-fledged state and add another star to the Stars and Stripes? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon, April the 23rd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about two issues with Dr. Michael New, abortion and Washington, D.C. statehood. We'll also talk about new FDA rules regarding chemical abortions. A little bit later, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Paul Dare in our series on cultural Marxism today, getting pastors to wake up about woke ideology. Church offering plates post-pandemic, will they survive? That'll be a question for Pastor Heath Curtis. Then we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We got four soundbites for you. One from Pastor Matt Harrison, to Christians facing cancel culture. Another from Wesley Smith, why science needs ethics. A third, Dr. Cameron McKenzie, Lutheran denominations following the culture. And soundbite number four comes from Pastor Brian Wolfmiller, the Lord's Prayer and the Psalms. You can vote in advance at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Or wait and give us a call, 1-877-623-MY-IE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. And the listeners with the best vote for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week this Friday will get the LPR bundle package. That's an Ad Crucem Baptism Keepsake, and I Have Issues t-shirt, and an Issues Etc. pen, bumper sticker, notepad, and tote bag. Joining us to talk about abortion and Washington, D.C. statehood, along with new FDA rules regarding chemical abortions, Dr. Michael New, visiting assistant professor of social research and political science at the Catholic University of America. He's associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute and columnist for National Review Online. Dr. New, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
I've noticed that a lot of pro-life organizations have come out very strongly against Washington, D.C., becoming the 51st state. Why is that?
Yes, so many of your listeners have heard. Yesterday, the House of Representatives cast a vote and it approved legislation to make Washington, D.C. the 51st state. It was a party line vote. Every Democrat voted in favor, every Republican voted against it. And pro-lifers oppose D.C. statehood for the simple fact of the matter that if you look at the party registration of Washington, D.C., if they do become a state, it would result in the election of at least one more congressman and two more U.S. senators who would almost certainly support legal abortion. And it would make it much harder to pass good, protective pro-life laws. So for kind of practical political reasons, that's why a lot of pro-lifers oppose D.C. statehood. Speaking for myself, if we'd like to give individuals in Washington, D.C., some congressional representation. You know, I personally wouldn't have a problem with incorporating parts of D.C. into Maryland or Virginia, but I just think that D.C. statehood is a bad idea.
Are there other reasons to oppose D.C. statehood apart from the change in the House and the Senate that would ensue?
Yes, one very big reason that pro-lifers should oppose D.C. statehood is that what would happen is almost certainly Washington, D.C.'s Medicaid program would start covering elective abortions. And we have very good research showing that when elective abortions are paid for by any kind of state Medicaid program, abortion rates go up. So the way our Constitution is written, Congress has a lot of say over public policy in the District of Columbia. And since 1996, the Washington, D.C. Medicaid program has not paid for elective abortions. But that would almost certainly change if D.C. is granted statehood. And I think Guttmacher estimates that currently there's about 3,900 abortions performed every year on Washington, D.C. residents. And I think the estimates that the Lewis Institute and I have come up with indicate there'd be hundreds more abortions every year if D.C. was granted statehood and the state Medicaid program went ahead and covered elective abortions.
Is the U.S. Senate likely to approve D.C. statehood?
I think it's unlikely. First, if you look at the Senate, it's a 50-50 split right now with Kamala Harris giving the tie-breaking vote. There are some Senate Democrats who are not on board with D.C. statehood, so that's an obstacle. Also, even if those Democrats do get on board, I think this is an issue where the Republicans would be very likely to filibuster and essentially be able to block D.C. statehood that way. So I think it's pretty unlikely.
Dr. New, you actually teach in D.C. As someone who does that, what are your personal thoughts about the prospect of D.C. statehood?
Well, again, I live in Maryland, but I teach at the Catholic University of America here in Washington, D.C. You know, I oppose, you know, D.C. statehood for a variety of reasons. You know, I think that when our founders wrote the Constitution, they wanted to limit the power of the federal government, and they simply did not make Washington, D.C. a state. They thought that if you make Washington, D.C. a state, the government effectively gets to represent itself in Congress, and that representative would vote for more taxes, more government, more spending, and that's not what the founders wanted. You know, they wanted to limit the power of the federal government. So I personally oppose, you know, D.C. statehood for that reason. I also oppose it because, you know, I am pro-life. I don't want to see, you know, elected officials or more elected officials who support legal abortion take office. I am concerned about D.C.'s Medicaid program paying for elective abortions. I sidewalk counsel outside the Washington, D.C. Planned Parenthood. Before the pandemic, you know, we would see a lot of women seeking abortions there. We saw a lot of, frankly, women who appeared hurt or upset after the abortion took place, and I just don't want to see more of that. You know, I think we should be trying to protect women and their unborn children, not make abortion policy more permissive.
Let's talk about new FDA rules that the Biden administration has issued regarding the abortion drug mifepristone recently.
Right. Pro-lifers incurred a bit of a policy setback last week. The Biden FDA department went ahead and stated that chemical abortions could be obtained without any kind of medical supervision. Essentially, women can now order these chemical abortion drugs online. They can also obtain chemical abortions through kind of telehealth or telemedicine. Again, this is only for the duration of the pandemic. This is not a permanent policy change, but again, it is still a setback that it does make chemical abortions, dangerous chemical abortions, I should add, a lot more accessible, and I think that's going to be detrimental to the health of women and result in the demise of hundreds, if not thousands, of more unborn children.
You had just mentioned that these rules are temporary. They're kind of pandemic rules, but how likely is it that the FDA make them permanent after the pandemic?
That's a very good question. I mean, this is something that pro-abortion groups have sought for a long time. As abortion clinics are closing, they've really sought to make chemical abortions more available. They actually litigated during the Trump administration. The Trump administration FDA did its best to keep these protective rules in place that would stop these telehealth abortions. The Supreme Court in January ruled in the Trump administration's favor. But again, I think that you know, there is a chance that the Biden FDA, even after the pandemic is over, may still allow for these telehealth, telemed chemical abortions to take place. We can't say for certain, but I think it is something pro-lifers need to be aware of.
How many chemical abortions are performed every year? What kind of a percentage of the abortions performed are chemical abortions?
Roughly, the Guttmacher Institute estimates that there's over 800,000 abortions performed every year in the United States, and about 40% of those are chemical abortions. The FDA approved the RU46 pill back in the year 2000, and ever since that time, the percentage of abortions that are chemical abortions has really increased dramatically. So we don't know exactly, but based on the percentages, I'd say over 300,000 abortions that take place every year are chemical abortions.
We are told that chemical abortions are safe. What studies are being cited to that effect, and what do we need to know about those studies?
Well, first of all, if you look at the research closely, I think good research does indicate that chemical abortions are, in fact, dangerous. The best study I'm aware of came out in the journal Obstetrics and Gynecology in the year 2015. And what made this study unique was it used kind of comprehensive data from California's Medicaid program. So they were able to track women who obtained chemical abortions and look at things like adverse effects and hospital visits afterwards. And it found that chemical abortions had a complication rate that was four times greater than surgical abortions. So there's really good research appearing in credible journals that does show that these chemical abortions are in fact risky and do pose health risks to women.
The actual research that's being cited by those who are in favor of or trying to make the case that chemical abortions are safe, is this the same quality of research?
I mean, I did a paper, or didn't, I should say an editorial for the Daily Signal, which appeared Thursday, and I looked at some of these studies they're citing, and I just think that the quality of research really is not all that good, and I think hopefully you can circulate that link to your listeners. I mean, a couple of the studies that I looked at, there was one from Great Britain, but the problem with that study was that it really did not separate women who obtained telehealth abortions from women who did not. So that's kind of a pretty obvious problem with this study. Another study did find that roughly 6% of women who had chemical abortions had to have like an emergency room visit within the next month. Typically, that rate's about 2.6% for other abortions. So again, there was a study that did look at emergency room visits that were related to the abortion through these telehealth abortions. They found that 6% of these women had to visit the emergency room for abortion-related reasons. Usually that percentage is around 2.6%. So again, when you look at the studies closely, it's pretty clear that these chemical abortions, especially those done without medical supervision, do pose health risks.
So why do chemical abortions, especially without medical supervision, pose even greater risks for women?
Well, there's a couple reasons. First off, if a woman does not have any kind of examination before the abortion, there's a chance that she may be carrying an ectopic pregnancy. And if she tries to go through with a chemical abortion while having an ectopic pregnancy, that could pose very serious health risks. In fact, it could even be fatal for the woman. So that's a concern. Another concern is that a woman may misjudge the gestational age of her unborn child. And if she tries to obtain a chemical abortion too late in pregnancy, that could have negative health consequences as well. In fact, even groups that provide these chemical abortions through telehealth are clear about these risks on their website. So it's not just pro-lifers saying this. Even the groups providing them do admit that there are some risks involved with these telehealth abortions that women should be aware of.
There was a recent story of an Argentinian abortion activist, and Argentina recently legalized abortion, who died from a chemical abortion. What should this tragic story tell us?
First off, the woman's name was Maria Del Valle Gonzalez Lopez, and I want to make it clear that her death is a tragedy, as well as the death of her unborn child. And what it tells us, I think, is that chemical abortions are a lot more dangerous than commonly realized. Between 2000 and 2018, the FDA, our own FDA, reported 24 deaths and over 4,000 adverse effects from the chemical abortion pill. And that's just what was reported. We know in the United States that our reporting requirements for abortion are not strong, so there may have been other deaths and other adverse effects we just simply don't know about. So I think this woman's tragic death really does indicate that chemical abortions are actually much more dangerous than commonly realized.
Dr. Michael New is visiting assistant professor of social research and political science at the Catholic University of America, associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, and columnist for National Review Online. You can read his columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Dr. New, thank you.
Thank you.
LCMS Life Ministry advocates for the unborn, weak, and vulnerable. They've produced free resources on a wide range of pro-life issues. Check them out at lcms.org/life. lcms.org/life. Pastor Paul Dare will be with us next. We continue our series on cultural Marxism today, getting pastors to wake up about woke ideology.
Christian Hope, The Constitution and Civic Virtue, Daily Bible Reading, News Media Consumption, American Revivalism. You can meet and hear some of your favorite guests teach on these topics at the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th in Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, July 23rd and 24th at Concordia University, Chicago.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Christian greeting card makers, gift shop owners, laser cutters, church banner creators, ornamentalists, poster purveyors, jewelry designers, fine artists, hymn writers, wood carvers, UV bed printers, and authors all love Issues Etc. And you'll find our work at adcrucem.com. That's adcrucem.com.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR21. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.